Hey, where are you? It's almost showtime.
Sylvia, do not go into work.
I'm already here. So is Gary. Why aren't you?
I was there and left. I'm with Joseph. You need to get out of there. It's not safe.
Not safe? What are you talking about?
You didn't see them?
See who?
You're at the station, right? In the parking lot. You didn't see them?
What's going on, Lindsay?
The bodies, Sylvia. Those creatures.
Are you messing with me?
They're not there.
What is going on?
What about the blood? It was everywhere.
This isn't funny, Lindsay.
Hang on, Sylvia. What is this?
Someone cleaned up our mess.
What? How would they? Why would they?
I don't know.
What should I tell Sylvia?
That you need the night off.
What about her and Gary? Will they be safe?
I'm pretty sure those things were after us.
Okay. Sylvia, you there? Listen, I need to take a sick day.
Lindsay, what happened to you?
I'll let you listen to the recording tomorrow, but look, I can't go back there.
What about the show?
Play a rerun. Do last year's Halloween special. Everyone loves that one.
I don't. It's what got us into all this. We never should have started this podcast. I knew it was a mistake.
Sylvia, I gotta go. We'll talk tomorrow.
Lindsay, wait.
Where are we going?
Home.
This is the Endless Elsewhere podcast, Chapter 4, The Candles in the Abyss.
We're back at the bank, have been for a while. It's nearly midnight now, the time I should be starting my show, but instead I'm here with Joseph. It was only a short time ago that we...
We don't have to start again, not yet. If you need more time...
I've taken too long as it is. I was trying to calm myself down, but I'm not so sure that I will ever be calm again.
Lindsay, I don't know what to say.
You gave me a lot of warnings when we first started this thing, but none of them were about friggin' monsters! The Cabal! That's what you said we needed to be afraid of! People! Those weren't people, Joseph! What were those things?
I doubt there was even a name for their kind. Lindsay, I think...
Yes?
You began this podcast to investigate a story. Years ago, I began my own work to do the same, but it's different now. It's all changed.
Changed how?
We've been pulled in.
Into what? The story?
I think we're a part of it now.
Yeah, well, I didn't sign up to be a part of any of this. I'm not... I can't do this.
You'd be surprised what you can do when you have to.
Oh, shut up with that! You're happy about this! Well, congrats. You were right all along. And it almost cost us our lives! Wait, did you know this was coming?
How could I have?
Answer the question. The back of your truck turned into a Renaissance fair pretty quickly. Why did you have all of that stuff?
What happened earlier, that... was not my first time.
Not your first time what? Fighting a monster?
I told you, this city is and has been crawling with these things. These things.
What is it?
Hell is empty, and all the devils are here.
Are you quoting Bill Shakespeare at me right now? Because I am not in the mood.
I don't know what those things were that attacked us tonight, but I may know where they came from.
The Land of Phantoms?
Yes.
It's on the other side of the planet, though. How did they get here, and why come after us? Because we mentioned their home in this podcast? Are these things really listening in? Explain that to me.
I can't. All I really know is...
What is it?
Aaron said that when the Weleavers and their crew got to the Land of Phantoms, there was nothing. None of the things that were said to live there.
Wait. You think they didn't find anything because... No. Because all the creatures that once lived there are...
Here, yes. Circle City has become the Land of Phantoms. It's the only thing that makes sense. Think about it. Your show? Every night people are calling in more and more with sightings of these things.
So they've been, what, slowly migrating here? Why?
I don't know.
Think. There's got to be something. Something in the Pendergast books, maybe?
Nothing that would explain them leaving Eastern Europe for the American Midwest.
What about other sources? Do you have anything else on the Land of Phantoms? Other mentions of it in other texts? Maybe in one of these thousands of books you have lining the walls here?
Actually, I do have another volume. One that predates the Pendergast manuscripts by hundreds of years. But I don't keep it with these.
So where is it?
Downstairs.
Oh, it's one of those. That's it? Really? What Joseph has just removed from one of the safety deposit boxes is a regular three-ring binder full of standard printer paper. Sorry, I guess I was expecting something like...
What, some sort of hefty medieval tome? A worm-eaten volume with metal latches and frayed pages?
Kinda, yeah.
Well, you'd be correct. That's exactly what this used to be. Specifically, it was a grimoire, a compendium of ancient arcana.
Arcana?
You know, esoterica.
What?
Sigils, glamours, incantations, that kind of thing.
It was a spellbook. Just say that then. You waste so much time showing off your vocabulary.
Hey, words die if they don't get used, and I will not stand by and let good words die.
You're so weird. So tell me about this magical trapper keeper you've got there.
It was the Codex Reclusio Alio in Oculo.
Is that backwards for something?
No, it's actually Latin this time. It roughly translates to the unclosing eye.
Spooky. So this spellbook, it talked about the Land of Phantoms?
No, it did not.
Then why are we...
The book was a palimpsest.
You know I don't know what that is, right?
It is a manuscript whose original content has been erased or covered over to make way for new content. However, traces of the original text often remain and even bleed back to the surface over time. With modern technology, the pages can be scanned and the primary content extracted digitally.
So, before it was a book of magic spells, it was something else. What?
A story. An account from the Age of the Crusades, written by an English knight. After suffering a terrible defeat, he and what remained of his men were making the long journey home when they decided to take a detour, to look in on a place they had heard about while in Jerusalem. You see, the Holy Land apparently had an opposite, a dark reflection.
An unholy land.
Right. The densest concentration of evil on the planet, what has been theorized as the present home for all those things that once lurked about in the shadows of the old world. Those things that inspired all of our myths and legends about monsters.
And they all gathered there?
They were summoned by those entities for whom the realm is named.
Phantoms.
Evil spirits, yes.
Why did they...
Demoned kind drew all of their corporeal minions to this place to guard it. There is something at the heart of the Land of Phantoms that is not to be seen by earthly eyes.
What is it?
A thin place. A sheer portion of the veil that divides our physical plane of existence from that of the spirit realm. It is a window into their world.
And why would evil spirits...
Because they want to be thought myth. But if you can peek in on them, well, the jig is up.
This reminds me of that machine Dr. Hardesty made. The one you told me about? What was it called again?
The Lantern, yeah. And that may not be a coincidence. I actually have my suspicions that Hardesty may have witnessed this window and that it inspired his invention.
Really? How so?
In the third manuscript, Hardesty assisted Grendel, now back in his own body, return to the Land of Phantoms for his final confrontation with Pendergast. He did so through the use of a flying craft that had been fashioned from reverse-engineered technology recovered from the other world. Let's put a pin in that last part for now. Anyway, when Grendel did not return, I suspect the Cabal traced this craft to the Land of Phantoms, finding Grendel's slain body in the thin place itself. Hardesty, still their lead scientist at the time, would have been summoned to study it.
Wild. So how did this window come to be?
Accidentally. There is a crater at the center of the Land of Phantoms.
A meteor strike?
It is where many stars fell. Tradition holds that this was where the Dark One and his minions landed on Earth after their expulsion from Paradise.
You're talking about...
Yes, I am.
Aaron didn't mention any crater. Why didn't the Weleavers find it?
I imagine they turned back before they reached it. But even if they hadn't, the window, this thin place, and the structure that contains it are invisible from outside of the crater. From the outside, it would have looked like little more than a darkened canyon.
So even if you were to fly over this place, you wouldn't see it either, which is why it hasn't been spotted from the air?
Exactly.
You said there is a structure that contains this thin place.
A fortress, yes, fashioned by inhuman hands.
Okay, it feels like we're straying back into the Pendergast books here. What does this binder have to say about the Land of Phantoms?
The knight who recorded this story, he had felt that the crusade was a divine mandate, that it was God's will for him to march on the Holy Land, but he was terribly disillusioned by the war. It was not at all what he'd thought. However, it was upon finding the Land of Phantoms that he realized his true mission. According to his story, this was God's true intention for him, not to go to the Holy Land, but to go to the Unholy Land.
The Watchtower ruins that Aaron mentioned.
Once the knights realized what this place was, a few of them remained behind to build the Watchtower to guard the entrance to the Land of Phantoms.
Just a few? Against all that evil?
They were the Candles in the Abyss. They took it upon themselves to ensure that no wayward wanderer ever ventured in by mistake, but their mission was also to make sure
that nothing got out.
Indeed, the knight wanted the place to become public knowledge so that it could be avoided at all costs. So he sent his manuscript home with one of his men. However, someone else eventually got their hands on it and
turned his story into a book of spells,
thus burying all knowledge of the place for hundreds of years. But then, in a very recent time, someone else came into possession of the grimoire and extracted the original text. This they did to rescue the knight's account before the codex was burned, so that the evil arcana could never be used again.
Someone who then printed out the story and stuck it in a binder for you. Why did you never publish this like you did the Pendergast books?
Because unlike those manuscripts, this was not the text.
The what now?
Sorry, the original. I didn't have the actual book, and I never will. I only have this binder. For all I know, this is an elaborate hoax. I had the content translated from its original Latin to English, and while the language appears to be authentic for the time and place of authorship, it still wasn't good enough for me. Then there was the scandal, and my publishing days were over, so this story never really got its chance. Maybe someday, but I can't imagine getting this into print anytime soon.
What about the person who gave it to you? Could they? I don't know, help with the authentication?
Yeah, that's where it gets a little sticky. You see, I got this binder from the same person who gave me the painting.
As in Grindel's painting. In the floor right there. Who are we talking about?
There is a local PI who occasionally gives me things, pieces of this puzzle.
This person is trying to help you?
I think he represents someone who is trying to help me, some mystery client who is working from the shadows. The same someone, I believe, who unburied the knight's story about the Land of Phantoms from the grimoire.
You have no idea who this person could be?
I only know the private detective, but he and I, we're not exactly chummy.
How so?
We've clashed in the past. When I was still collecting and publishing stories, a couple of them concerned him and his agency.
Agency? This wouldn't be the Unclosing Eye Detective Agency, would it? Wait. Unclosing Eye, like the book. That's not a coincidence, is it?
No, the PI named his agency after the Codex. He recovered it in one of his early cases and adopted the grimoire's name.
Specializing in the mysterious and the monstrous. That's their shtick, right?
Do you know of the agency?
By reputation only. I've had plenty of calls about them to Circle City Supernatural. I even did a whole show on the agency, trying to figure out if they were legit or not, but didn't get very far.
They went dark a couple of years back, getting paid under the table, taking cases by referral, that kind of thing. And it's my fault, actually.
How?
I exposed the PI and his employees.
You did what? Wait, hang on. The field recorder is about to die. I need to plug it in for a bit.
Okay, let's pause here then. I'll make us some coffee while we wait for it to charge.
Sounds good.
Better?
40% power. It's good enough.
I meant you.
Oh, yeah. The coffee is helping, thanks. Are you getting tired? I'm used to being up all night for the show, but are you?
I'm a night owl too, so I'm good. Are we going to pick up where we left off?
Let's back up a bit for the sake of the listener. While the recorder was charging, you and I combed through the binder, looking for clues to explain what's happening now.
That we did.
We also spoke of the Crusaders who remained to guard the Land of Phantoms, determining that they would have eventually died and the Watchtower become abandoned, falling into ruin, which is what clearly happened. Meaning that if the creatures of the realm wanted to leave, they could have done so at any time in the hundreds of years since, or even before that. So why did they not depart until now? And why come here to Circle City?
Well, I hope your audience feels very caught up with all the things we did not figure out between recordings.
Maybe the people who gave you the binder have some idea. This PI, his agency, and their mysterious client. You said they've been leaving you breadcrumbs despite the fact that you've been at odds with them. It sounds like they want to be your ally. Tell me more about that, about the agency as a whole. I think that's where we cut off earlier.
The Unclosing Eye Detective Agency was founded by a man named Keith Sorrels. He was a detective with the CCPD. But after the mysterious disappearance of his partner, he took an early retirement and became a PI. He quickly developed a reputation for handling strange cases. He later hired a one Ryan Tolliver and Carolyn Pelfrey to work for him. That second name you may recognize even as an out-of-towner.
Pelfrey. It does ring familiar. Who is she?
Well, actually, I have an idea. In the first episode of this show, you played the audio from Adam Baum's vlog about me. He made one about Carolyn Pelfrey as well. It's not a complete history, but it will give you a good overview, and it also links her to Keith and Ryan.
Really? One sec. I should be able to find it on my phone. Here it is. Okay, listeners, I'm going to play the video now. As before, you will not be able to see it, obviously, but the audio will hopefully be good enough for you to get the gist.
Hey guys, Adam here from the Adam Bomb channel. So I've had a lot of requests to do this video, especially from those of you who live in Circle City, like me, where all of this went down a while back. But before we get started, be sure to hit that subscribe button as I post new videos weekly. Okay, here we go. Carolyn Ann Pelfrey. Cult leader, attempted murderer, and wanted fugitive. Many have wondered how someone like this, young and beautiful, with her whole life ahead of her, could have gone so wrong. No one knows when exactly she developed an interest in the occult, but it was early, in high school by some accounts. It was in college, though, that the dark arts became an obsession for her. This is also where she met a kindred spirit, Lucas DeWalt, a history major and member of the fencing team. The two became very close, so much so that when Carolyn dropped out her freshman year, Lucas did too. Together, they attempted a revival of the Boonies cult that terrorized Circle City back in the 1980s. They recruited others and started performing secret rites, but the group didn't stay together long. It's unclear what happened, but the other members left after a time, making it just Carolyn and Lucas again. However, this did not deter them. The pair broke into the old Roman Civic Theater, where the Boonies' former leader once worked as an actor. It has been theorized they undertook some kind of ritual to conjure his spirit. But the police arrived, and Lucas attacked a detective, while Carolyn escaped. Lucas was arrested and tried for the attempted murder of a police officer. He is currently serving a 20-year sentence. Soon after this, Carolyn became involved with a motorcycle club known as the Infernal Ears, who then helped her in an attempt to assassinate Alex Heaney, the detective who had arrested Lucas. They attacked him and his partner in public, in broad daylight actually, at a local eatery called Joe's Diner. This was assumed to be revenge for the capture of Lucas. Carolyn and her new followers failed, however. In fact, several of the bikers were killed by police in a subsequent chase and shootout that began at the diner and ended down the street, at Circle City Cemetery. Once again, Carolyn escaped. Details become sketchy as to what happened next, but according to an interview published on the website The Vigilante, a groundskeeper found Carolyn the following day. He took her to a church, believing she needed to be exorcised. Apparently, the ceremony conducted at the theater had left Carolyn possessed. Not by a ghost, but by a demon. Instead of performing the exorcism, however, the church called the police and Carolyn was finally captured. She was injured in the arrest and taken to the hospital. Somehow, the groundskeeper persuaded the hospital's chaplain, a man named Arvin Reyes, to not only help him break Carolyn out on Christmas Eve, but to then perform the exorcism on her. This apparently worked and freed Carolyn of the evil spirit. She and the groundskeeper fled, but Arvin Reyes was arrested and tried for kidnapping and obstruction of justice. He too is now incarcerated. It seems everyone who came into contact with this woman ended up imprisoned or even killed. Or they just vanished, like she did. Along with the mysterious groundskeeper, the remaining members of the Infernaliers Motorcycle Club have gone missing. So too has Detective Alex Haney. Even his partner, Keith Sorrells, retired from the force and has become a private investigator, refusing to speak about the matter with anyone. As for Carolyn herself, it is widely assumed that she has fled the state, maybe even the country. But local sightings of her continue to this day. Is she still here? Living in secret? And if so, why? Do you think Carolyn Pelfrey is still somewhere in Circle City? Leave your answer in the comments below, and if you like this video, be sure to hit that thumbs up button. Thanks for watching, guys.
Remember me telling you how a groundskeeper at the cemetery found the lantern when Hardesty's body was dug up? Well, that's not the only thing he found while at work.
The groundskeeper in the video who helped Carolyn. It's the same guy.
Ryan Tolliver. That's how those two came together.
And they both eventually went to work for Keith Sorrells at the Unclosing Eye Detective Agency. Didn't that video just say she tried to kill Sorrells when he was still a cop?
Crazy, right? I never did figure out that bit about their story. But the rest of it came in various publications of mine, personal accounts that revealed how two wanted fugitives were now at work for a former police officer who was knowingly aiding and abetting them.
Ah, now I see why there has been friction between you and the agency. Your stories exposed them. But it sounds like if anyone has the insight we need into what's going on in this town, it's them. If they are truly specializing in the mysterious and monstrous, as their logo claims, then they're probably in deep on all of this. Do you have even the remotest idea of how to contact the agency?
None. Like I said, they went underground a long while back. They don't want to be found, least of all by me.
So a dead end.
I'm afraid so.
But it wasn't a dead end. Yes, I'm back at the station doing narration. It took me another day, but I got my courage up and here I am. Now, back to the dead end. That was not a dead end. I let Sylvia listen to the recordings I'd made. After several long moments of quiet disbelief that Joseph and I had done battle with unearthly creatures right outside this very building, I played Sylvia the second recording in which Joseph and I discussed the Land of Phantoms, the Crusader's story, and the Unclosing Eye Detective Agency. She stopped it abruptly, however, at the mention of Keith Sorrells. Before I could ask what the what, Sylvia raced back to the control room to her computer and said nothing for several minutes. I just watched her through the window, baffled but patient because I knew she was onto something. When Sylvia found whatever it was that she was after, I started recording, assuming it was important.
I knew that name. He's tried to get in touch several times now, but then so have a lot of people. I figured he was just another crank.
Who, the PI?
Yes, we actually started to play his first message in episode 2, but it got cut off. I have it queued up. Listen.
Mr. Leck, long time. Listen, we need to speak. Immediately. You don't know what you've done. It's about the painting. Please, get in touch. Call me at...
Then he gave his number, which I promptly called. Granted, I should have consulted Joseph first, but I was all too eager for our next lead.
How'd you get this number?
You gave it to me?
Who referred you to our services? They would have given you a code word. Say it, now, or I'm hanging up.
I don't have a code word. Is this Detective Sorrells? My name is...
Lindsay Mallon. Of course, I should have recognized your voice immediately.
Yes, it's me. I'm calling because...
Where's the collector? He's the one I really need to speak to.
He's not with me.
Then why are you calling me? You're not recording this for your podcast, are you?
Maybe?
Goodbye, Miss Mallon.
Wait! I can get you in a room with Joseph.
Joseph? You two are getting awfully cozy, huh?
I wouldn't say that. Anyway, where can we meet?
I'll come to you.
At the station?
At the bank. I'll see you soon.
Hang on! How do you know where... Okay?
I cannot believe that you called Sorrells without telling me.
It was an impulse. I'm sorry. He's been trying to get in touch since we launched the podcast. I didn't want to lose the lead. He has something for us.
Like what?
I guess we ask him.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
Mr. Leck?
Detective Sorrels.
You mind?
Come on in.
Thanks. Miss Mallon?
How did you...
He followed you.
You tricked me?
No. No, I found this place ages ago.
Did you?
No offense to Miss Mallon here, but if she can track down the Circle City Collector... I mean, you know, detective here. Come on. It was, however, very wise of you not to reveal the bank's location on the podcast. I did buy you some time.
Time for what?
And I'm glad you finally got in touch when you did. I've come by here more than once, but... Well, my colleagues kept talking me out of it. They don't share my belief that you can be of some use to us.
What are you talking about?
Oh, and I did what you asked, by the way. Rated, reviewed the podcast, gave it 2 stars, and said, a little convoluted.
We don't have time for games. Why are you here, Sorrels?
You're correct, Mr. Leck. You do not have time, and that is why I'm here.
Just get to it.
Let's not be rude, Joseph. This is our guest. Please, Detective Sorrels, this way.
He's good where he is.
Excuse us for just a minute.
What are you doing?
What are you doing? I get that there's bad blood between you two, but you're going to blow our next and only lead. If this guy knows anything about what's going on, we need to know it too. Let me talk to him alone.
You said that he only wanted to talk to me.
Please, I can get him to talk. Superpower, remember? Now shoo before you ruin everything. Detective Sorrels, would you like a cup of coffee?
Sounds great, actually.
Joseph, maybe you could go put a fresh pot on for our guest?
I'd love to.
Please, Detective Sorrels, come have a seat.
Thanks. Wow, this place is... something else.
It's quite the library, isn't it? Here, take that other chair. This is where Joseph and I do most of our chatting.
I've heard.
So you've been listening to the podcast? Did you really only give it 2 stars?
No. No. I was just trying to get under Lex's skin.
So, what do you actually think of it?
I think... It doesn't really matter what I think. I'm not here to...
Please, tell me. I want to know.
It's your sign-off.
The motto taken from Joseph's work. Too cheesy?
Too idealistic.
Oh?
I saw a lot. As a cop. And I've seen even more as a PI. Truly. Truly awful stuff, you know? I guess it's made me a little cynical. Or maybe it's just made me a little more realistic. You know, the whole good versus evil thing. I don't know. It's been my experience that there really are heroes and villains, but that more often than not, they just cancel each other out. If the good guy wrestles the bad guy over the cliff, he's rid the world of some evil, sure, but he's also rid the world of his own good, so... Was it even worth it? I mean, really, when you think about it, what's the point? The truly good and the truly evil fight to the death, and all it does is leave the rest of us normal, gray area people just standing there like, I don't know, what now?
I had known Detective Sorrels mere minutes, and I could already tell that this was a man with a burden. I honestly knew it as soon as he entered the bank. You can't really hear it in his voice, but it's in his eyes. They're slightly hooded, somewhat bloodshot, and both have dark circles under them. His eyes alone betray his distress. The rest of him is practically invulnerable. He's a big man, robust and strong. This is clear even under his long dark coat. He is completely bald, but it is by choice as far as I can tell beneath his trilby hat. Whether it is purposeful or not, he absolutely looks like a private detective. Not that it is done as a ruse. He is no fake. Quite the opposite. The fact that he was sitting here in the bank more than proved his skills.
A moment ago you said that our withholding this location bought us time. What did you mean by that?
But you and I were not the only ones looking for the Circle City Collector.
The attack at the station. Do you know something about that?
I know who's behind it. And so do you. You guys said it in your very first episode.
What? Who are you talking about?
Your partner knows. He's just too afraid to say it.
I don't think Joseph knows, and I certainly don't, so who-
The Traveler of Space and Time.
Clarence Grindel? He's here in Circle City?
Has been. For a pretty long while now.
Why?
He's looking for his painting.
You are correct, and hey, what gives? Where's the coffee?
Brewing. Why did you give me the painting, Sorrels? Was it so Grindel would come after me?
No. Well, maybe at first. Listen, we knew the painting would be safe with you. What we didn't count on was you joining a podcast and announcing to the world that you had it hiding in your basement.
That's why Grindel is after us.
And why he sicked his dogs on you the other night. They were trying to scare you, chase you back here. Their task was to retrieve the painting. And then, you know, kill you a little bit for good measure. Fortunately, though, you stood your ground. Good on you, by the way. Not everyone has the metal for this sort of thing.
Grindel is controlling the creatures just like he did in the Land of Phantoms all those decades ago.
He sure is.
So he summoned them to Circle City. That's why they've all come here?
Not exactly. When Grindel took hold of them back in the day, he inadvertently imprinted on them.
Imprinted?
In the same way young animals will do, creating a bond with a surrogate parent.
Right, so Grindel became their mama bird, and, well...
Well, what?
When he took a body and settled here in Circle City, all those nasty things on the other side of the world...
felt his presence here and started flocking to him. They've been slowly migrating across the globe... for him. All this time.
Exactly. Which is why this town has only gotten stranger and more dangerous with each passing year. Why it's become ground zero for the supernatural. Remember, it's not just monsters that lived in the Land of Phantoms. The place was full of all kinds of evil things. Spirits and the like. Pretty much everything people call into your show about, Miss Mallon. And as those Weliver kids apparently proved, the migration from the Land of Phantoms is more or less complete.
Hell is empty, and all the devils are here.
Wait, Grindel didn't actually know they were coming here for him, did he?
Probably not at first, no. But I can only assume that once they started showing up at his doorstep, he put two and two together.
He is a vehement believer in fate. Grindel would have seen this as a sign.
A sign of what?
That it was his time.
We suspect he has some kind of power play in the works, but what that's supposed to look like, no idea. All I know is that we need to head it off the pass. If we can't stop it before it starts, there's going to be no stopping it at all. But my agency and I do have a plan.
What is it?
Can't tell you much. You understand?
Because I'm recording and because Grindel is apparently listening to the show?
Well, yeah, but also...
your colleagues don't approve of our involvement.
It's a matter of trust. They don't think we can trust you.
I assure you, Detective Sorrels, you can trust us.
My agency and I have been at war with Grindel and his nasty little pets for quite some time. It's been a secret war. We fight it in the shadows. But the insurgency of his minions is, frankly, overwhelming us. We can't keep them in check anymore. There are pockets of the creatures spread throughout town, mostly in abandoned buildings, sewers, all the places they can hide. But we think the strongest concentration is likely to be around Grindel himself.
Guard dogs.
Right, but they might also give away his location. So, we figure if we can find their main nest, we'll find him.
Your plan is to go after Grindel himself?
Yeah, we figure if his presence here is what's drawing all the monsters to Circle City, then his absence might be the thing to disperse them. Who knows, they might even slink back to that little hole in Transylvania where they belong.
Grindel is a spirit, taking whatever body he wants. You can't kill him. How do you plan to stop him?
And that's the part I can't tell you.
Well, if you can't trust us, how are we supposed to trust you? It's a two-way street.
What is it you need from us, Detective?
He wants the painting back, don't you? You want to use it as bait to lure Grindel out of hiding.
Well, as a matter of fact...
what is that?
Oh, time's up.
But you just got here.
Rain check on the coffee, thanks.
Detective Sorrels, wait.
We'll talk again, later.
But...
Lindsay, let him go.
Look, Mr. Leck, I get it. All right, you and me, we've had our disagreements over the years, but this thing is bigger than us, okay? And I think you know that. The others told me not to do this, but here. An act of good faith. I know where your secret lair is, and now you know where mine is. This is the address. Just leave it out of the show, please and thank you. I'm trusting you with this, both of you. Let's talk more tomorrow. At my place, this time. You can meet the rest of the gang. Round three? Sound good? Okay. Bye now.
So, what do you think? Joseph? Joseph? Joseph has just moved to the front windows of the lobby and is now peeking through the curtains. I am joining him there. What is it?
Not sure yet.
We are watching Detective Sorrels. He is crossing the street to an old van parked at the curb. He's gotten in. What is that? He's just taken something from an inner pocket of his coat. He's talking into... is that a walkie-talkie?
It's a transceiver.
What's that?
It's like a walkie-talkie.
For the listeners, I'm giving Joseph a look. Why is he using that instead of a phone? Who is he talking to?
Who indeed?
Do you think it's their mystery client? The person who's been trying to help you?
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, that was short but enlightening. So, it's Clarence Grindle behind all of this. Pendergast's mortal enemy is now our mortal enemy.
It doesn't seem real, does it?
You were right about us becoming part of the story.
I'm sorry, Lindsay. I never intended.
I came to you, remember? I'm the one who barged into your home and your life. I just had to know if it was all true, didn't I?
Do you regret it?
Oh, there he goes. Detective Sorrel's just pulled away. I think I should be off to have a show tonight. Can't miss two nights in a row.
Please be careful. I'll be up if you need me. Just call. You know, in case.
Grindle doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who tries the same trick twice. I'll be fine.
Lindsay?
Yes?
Do you regret starting this podcast?
How could I not? This thing was literally threatening my life now. I was the enemy of a time-traveling ghost and his army of monsters.
Ugh, saying that out loud sounds so ridiculous, but it's all real. So, yes, I did regret starting this podcast. But there was one thing I did not regret. Something that honestly made it all worth it. I just didn't know it yet. It was actually a call to the show that night that made me realize what that something was. I'm sure it was just a trick of the light, or your eyes. Your shadow is not plotting against you, ma'am. I promise. But thanks for that call anyway. Welcome to Circle City Supernatural. What you got?
Hi there. Longtime listener here. But full disclosure, I haven't actually called in since the Kadera days. And to be even more honest, I only gave you a ring tonight because, well, I wanted to ask about your podcast. Is that okay? Are we allowed to talk about that show on this show?
Sure we can. What would you like to know?
I don't mean to pry, but I was curious about your relationship with that collector guy.
It's a working relationship.
Sure, sure. It's just that...
Is this about that harp music that was in episode one? Because I didn't put that in there. My producer thought it'd be cute.
Sorry, I didn't mean to, you know, put you out there like that. It seems like the two of you are, well, you know...
It's strictly professional. If you've listened to the podcast, then you know what he's like. I'm not sure he even considers me a friend yet.
Dude, come on! That guy, likes you. Like, a lot. And I think you like him, too.
And that's probably a good place for a commercial break. Stay tuned for more tales of the bizarre and wild speculations about my love life. The caller was right. The only regret I didn't have in all of this was that it brought me to Joseph. After he and I became part of the story, as he called it, what I call getting ambushed by some monsters on the worst night of my life, I would have bailed. I should have bailed on this whole project, but I didn't. I was still here. I am still here. And I think it's for him. Probably something I should tell Joseph in person before he hears this episode. Anyway. The next day we met at the bank, and Joseph drove us in his old truck to the address Detective Sorrels had given him. I will refer to the offices of the Unclosing Eye Detective Agency only as the Hideaway. It is a commercial space that they are quietly renting, and that's not giving anything away, believe me. The place is not what you'd think. Being a detective, Keith Sorrels knew how to track a person down, meaning that he also knew how to never be tracked down himself. Joseph parked, but we didn't get out immediately. We looked around, cautious, suspicious. The van we'd seen Keith driving yesterday was nowhere in sight. At Joseph's nudging, we headed into the building. I was a little surprised to find the door unlocked, but we were expected after all. We stepped in and were, I won't say greeted, confronted is maybe a more appropriate word, by a pair of individuals. This was Carolyn Pelfrey and Ryan Tolliver, the former cultist and groundskeeper who'd been thrown together by the most unlikely of circumstances. Carolyn was svelte, pretty. Ryan, lean and handsome. Both would have been considered young, but their eyes. They had the same eyes as their employer. Experienced, yet suffering and tired. Like they'd seen things men and women were not meant to see. According to Sorrels, they had been fighting for this city in secret, but it was too much now. They were little more than candles in the abyss, as Joseph had said of those English crusaders who once guarded the land of phantoms. I can't not draw some kind of parallel between the detective agency and those knights of old, who'd taken it upon themselves to battle back the darkness for the good of us all.
As we stood there in awkward silence, I studied our hosts closely, but got little more than a glimpse from either one of them. It was Joseph who had their attention. They focused hard, angry stares at him. Curiously, most of this town hated the Circle City Collector because they thought his stories were lies. But there were at least a few who hated him because they knew firsthand that these stories were absolutely true. Stories they would have preferred to keep secret, not published for the world to see.
Where is Sorrels?
He stepped out for a minute.
He'll be back soon.
We don't have all day.
You're free to go.
Don't let the door hit you in the ass.
So, I'm Lindsay. You're Ryan? Pleased to meet you. And Carolyn, how do you do?
Yeah, hello.
What's up?
It's a lovely place you have here. Look, Joseph, all the rugs. It's kind of like your place. You guys decorate the same. At least you have that in common. While we have a moment, I was wondering if I could ask you guys some questions.
We're not interested in being part of your podcast.
If you want to know our stories, your boyfriend there has documented them pretty well. The pieces he knows, at least.
So much for your superpowers. What was that?
What was what?
In that back room. What was that?
It's probably just Keith.
You said he'd left. Who is back there?
It's nobody.
You have a client who's been trying to help me, don't you? Is that who's back there?
We don't know what you're talking about.
For people who have to live under the radar, you are terrible liars.
We told Keith this was a mistake.
He thinks we need you. We don't. I think you should just go now.
Who's back there? Is it the same person on the other end of that transceiver that Keith carries?
Maybe don't exchange significant glances with each other if you want us to believe you have no idea who we're talking about. Come on, guys. Who is it?
Answer us.
Stop!
Whoa,
stop!
There, big guy.
Move!
Joseph,
let's
hang
not
on.
Do anything we're going to regret.
Get out of my way.
We're not moving.
Back up, now.
But he didn't back up. Joseph lost his characteristic cool. I suppose it was the idea that all the answers he sought were within reach. That just beyond that door at the back of the room was someone who could tell him so much more than he already knew. Joseph tried barging past Carolyn and Ryan, but they stood their ground. It was honestly very brave of them to do so. Joseph is basically a giant, after all, and the two of them were rather petite in comparison. But they had faced down worse things than my companion. Even so, they were not enough to hold him back, only slow him down. With one on either arm, Joseph pushed on, forcing them backward. I guess I was in shock because I just stood there watching. Or maybe I wanted Joseph to get through and find out who was in that back room. It wasn't meant to be, however. Just then, Detective Sorrels returned to the hideaway. Seeing the situation, he threw in with his employees and the three of them dragged Joseph back, thrusting him toward me and the front door.
What is wrong with you? This is not why I invited you here.
Who is back there? Tell me.
You know what? I made a mistake. This is not going to work. Just go.
Not until I know.
Get out now.
Joseph, come on. This isn't worth it. Let's just leave. Come on. I'm sorry, everyone. He's just... I'm sorry.
Ms. Mallon, you seem like a good person. Maybe reconsider this podcast. Or, if nothing else, your association with that guy.
Is Joseph right about your mystery client? Is there someone back there?
There is not.
I said in the first episode that I can usually tell when someone is lying to me. I'll let the listener assume what I thought of Detective Sorrel's answer.
Joseph and I are back at the bank.
Could you please give that a rest?
I'm sorry?
We need to be done.
For today?
Forever.
Why are you saying that?
I don't want to end up like those people. Did you see them? Their eyes? They're this close to the edge.
They're tired. They need our help.
I don't know what their plan is to defeat Grindel, but it's going to fail. And we're not going to be a part of it.
Why are you talking like this? What about our motto? About being the kind of people from the books?
Now grow up, Lindsay. I heard Sorrels yesterday, and you know what? He's right. Good and bad, they clash, and they kill each other, and that's it. They cancel each other out, and nothing changes. That is why the world is all gray.
You're giving up. I should have seen this coming. It's what you do, isn't it? After the scandal, you ran away and hid. Things get rough, and that's what you do. You're not who I thought you were.
And to think...
What? Think what?
Never mind. If you want to be done, we can be done. How do we end this?
We give Grendel what he wants.
The painting.
Apparently he listens to this show, so... So, Clarence Grendel, if you can hear me right now, and if you want your painting back, just give us a time and a place. He can reach out through the website, right? Like everyone else?
Yes, he can.
Good. Do that. Make a rendezvous and we'll be there. Lindsay and I are done. We're out. The deal is you let us walk. No more attacks, nothing. You leave us alone. If you can agree to that, then you can have your painting. What, Lindsay? Why are you looking at me that way? This is for both of us. Do you want to live the rest of your life looking over your shoulder? The other night, you want that to happen again?
No, I don't.
Of course not. Neither do I. There's nothing we can do about this. Grendel is an immortal, body-stealing spirit with an army of monsters, and we're the merely mortal.
Okay, Joseph. I think maybe the next episode will be our last one, folks, so stay tuned for that. Do good. Fight you. Whatever. I'm Lindsay Mallon, and this is the Endless Elsewhere podcast.